a recent task. This is hereby issued to blank for the modest yet mighty task of blank. We honor your victory. I was turned on to Emily's amazing highlighting approach when someone handed me a card that said, I notice how awesome you are. It made my day. I then got myself a pack of McDowell's cards to hand out that say, I love the shit out of you, and you don't suck. McDowell's cards are powerful because they give both compliments and truth. Anyone can be a Hallmark card, doling out bland flattery and boring cliches. But highlighting is about more than just giving regular praise. Like Emily McDowell's cards, it is about truly expecting the best from people and helping everyone in your life perform, act, and show up as the best, most honest version of themselves. The Pygmalion Effect. There is a famous Greek myth about the sculptor Pygmalion. According to legend, Pygmalion used a large piece of ivory to carve his vision of the ideal woman. His statue was so beautiful and realistic that he fell in love with it. Embarrassed and ashamed to admit his desires, Pygmalion made offerings to the love goddess Aphrodite. At her altar, he secretly prayed to meet a woman who would be the living likeness of my ivory girl. When Pygmalion got back to his studio, he planted a soft kiss on the statue. To his surprise, he found the ivory lips warm. When he kissed her again, the statue came to life. Pygmalion then married the woman of his own creation. The Pygmalion myth is about the self-fulfilling power of expectation. Pygmalion created a blueprint of what he wanted, and then it came to life. In other words, great expectations are met with greatness. Psychologists have found that this idea is no myth. This phenomenon is called the Pygmalion effect. When voters are told they are more politically active than their peers, even if they were actually chosen at random, they have a 15% higher turnout rate than the control group. When donors are told that they are above average givers, even if they are not, they in turn donate more to become above average givers. When hotel maids are told that they have a high-intensity, calorie-burning job, they in turn then burn more calories. When a computer gives automated compliments to students, those students perform better on tasks, even when the students know those compliments are automated. Positive labels. Humans love to be given positive labels. They improve our self-image and gently push us to be better versions of ourselves. So as you use conversation sparkers and see what unexpected directions they lead you in, allow yourself to be impressed by the person across from you. Listen for their eloquent ideas. Find ways to emphasize their strengths. Celebrate their excitement. Take the rather silly example of the sorting hat in the Harry Potter series. At the beginning of each school year, Hogwarts students are sorted into different houses by a magical hat that reads their minds, taking full measure of their hidden skills. Each house is known for different strengths, and as they move to the higher grades, students' defining characteristics become more and more pronounced. Students in Slytherin tend to be sly, savvy, and interested in the dark arts, whereas those in Hufflepuff often end up in caretaking magical jobs like herbology and care of magical creatures. For better or for worse, the more clear the labels we're given, the more we embody them. Here are some examples you could use. You know everyone. You must be a great networker. I'm amazed by your dedication to this organization. They're lucky to have you. You're so knowledgeable in this subject. Thank goodness you're here. Exponential excitement. Another way of highlighting is to celebrate the victories of others as if they were your own. Good feelings multiply around other good feelings and divide when they are not matched. When you see someone who is proud, excited, or passionate, mirror and match it. This associates you with their feelings of pleasure. You can say something simple like, I'm so thrilled for you. How wonderful that must be. That is just the best news. Congrats. When I see something, anything that's awesome, I always take the opportunity to highlight. I tell my barista his latte art is gorgeous. I gush over my friend's new haircuts. I send out postcards telling people they're ballers. Yes, really. Skill number 2, be a raver. Want to know one of the biggest missed opportunities in social situations? Introductions. I get some version of this email multiple times per week. Hey, Vanessa, I wanted to introduce you to Dave. Dave, here's that intro you were asking for. Hope you two connect. Boring. I have no idea who he is or why I should know him. The same thing happens at networking events, client meetings, and conferences. I am almost always introduced to someone in the most boring, generic way possible. Vanessa, meet John. John, meet Vanessa. This is a waste of an opportunity. Seize introductions as the perfect way to highlight people. Even if you've only known them for a few minutes, you can find something to rave about. Here are some examples. Vanessa, meet Dave. He is killing it in the software industry and just had a hugely successful launch. Joe, meet Sue. She's an incredible painter and one of the most talented artists I know. Kirk, let me introduce you to Annie. We just met and she is telling me the most fascinating story of her trip to South Africa. You can even do this when you're the one introducing yourself. It's so nice to meet you. I have heard that you have an incredible blog. Please tell me about how you got all your success. Great to know you. A friend of John is a friend of mine. He always knows the most interesting people. It's a pleasure. Your name tag says you work at Ken's Bakery. They are my favorite pizza place in town. Have you always been a pizza aficionado? Why are raving introductions so powerful? First, you give people positive labels right at the start. Second, you tee up a great conversation and possible discussion topics for the people involved. Third, you get people talking about themselves, what they do, and who they are, which produces dopamine. Yes, a raving introduction is also a conversational spark. Boom! Win, win, win. Skill number 3, don't be a golem. Do you know what the opposite of the Pygmalion effect is? The golem effect. The golem effect is when low expectations lead to poor performance. Major Wilburn Schrank decided to test the golem effect on incoming United States Air Force Academy freshmen. Schrank randomly assigned labels to a group of 100 enlisted airmen at the United States Air Force Academy Preparatory School. They were given one of 5 different made-up ability levels. The U.S. military is all about labels, rank, and position, so Schrank wanted to know if these labels have any effect on academic performance. Sure enough, for all of the data sets, the airmen who received the worst labels also performed the worst. The golem effect can have devastating consequences across the board. Dr. Brian McNatt found that the golem effect is especially prevalent in the workplace. Think of bosses who pick favorites. Here's what happens. Jeff is the boss. He hires a new sales associate from his alma mater, XYZ University. He takes her under his wing. They grab lunch more often. He gives her the best assignments. After all, Jeff thinks anyone from his alma mater has the best possible education, and he wants his fellow alumni to succeed. She benefits from the Pygmalion effect. Jeff expects the best from her, and she performs at her best. Other employees see this favoritism and feel left out. One particular manager, Ken, went to ABC University, XYZ's rival. Jeff is constantly ribbing Ken, jokingly, of course. Ken doesn't get invited to watch games at the boss's house on the weekends. Jeff teases Ken for not being able to get into XYZ University. Ken knows he's just kidding, but feels the sting anyway. Hallway chit-chat and water cooler conversations matter. Expecting the best is not just important for new people, but also to build up the existing people in your life. What are you saying about and to your colleagues? Being a highlighter is about constantly searching for the good in people. When you tell people they are good, they become better. When you search for what's good, you feel great. Bonus, help people impress you. Have you ever wanted to impress people with your knowledge, your experience, your success? I think highlighting is actually the key to impressing people. My friend Thursday Bram is an amazing highlighter. She runs a club called Pi Ladies. This is a group of female coders who use the Python programming language. They meet multiple times a week to socialize, brainstorm, and help on coding projects. When Thursday and her fellow founders got the idea for the group, it was important for them to create a thriving, supportive group of women. Thursday got the idea to bring gold star stickers. You know, the kind teachers gave us when we were little? Everyone, no matter how old, loves getting a gold star. So at meetings and during events, Thursday passes out gold stars to ladies who contribute an idea, help fix a problem, or are just all around awesome. Not surprisingly, people love it. And as more and more Pi ladies receive gold stars, they act in more and more gold star worthy ways. The cycle creates an upward spiral of behavior. You don't actually have to carry around Gold Star stickers to highlight people, although it would be a fun experiment to try. Instead, highlighting is about giving people emotional Gold Stars by assigning positive labels, capitalizing on their excitement, and calling out their good deeds. Being memorable is not about bringing up your high points. It's about highlighting theirs. Don't try to impress people. Let them impress you. Hacking listening. I have made my vow of silence an annual tradition. It reminds me to pause, stop interrupting, and listen intently. Now, hundreds of readers join me on these quiet adventures with the hashtag Vow of Silence. We quit social media, turn off email, and just practice listening. Every time, I'm astounded by how many people yell at me during my vow, as if my not speaking somehow also turns off my hearing. Each time, I am shocked when people attempt to use elaborate hand gestures and dramatic dance as they talk to me. Quiet is not deaf. Most importantly, after each vow, I am reminded that while listening is an amazing tool to get people to open up, it's only the first step. Real connection comes from interaction. Want to do a vow of silence with me? Join us. When you sign up for the digital bonuses, we will send you a reminder when we have our next one. Register at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. I once had dinner with a former fashion model. Genevieve is stunning, shiny auburn hair, milky skin, and super long legs. During our meal, she was demure, pleasant, and attentive, but barely spoke. When asked a question, she would smile, answer quickly, and take a sip of wine. I didn't think much of the experience and probably wouldn't have remembered it at all until something interesting happened a few weeks later. I was at a party talking to a few friends when Genevieve sauntered up. I turned and introduced her, trying as best as I could to rave. Even though we had spent an evening together, I didn't have much to go on. So I kept it simple. Everyone meet the lovely Genevieve. We had dinner at the amazing new Italian restaurant on 23rd last month. She shook hands with the group, stayed for a few minutes, and then asked if I wanted to grab another glass of champagne with her. As we walked away, she huffed in exasperation. "Ugh," she exclaimed. "I have met your friend Chris at least a dozen times. Every time I see him, he doesn't remember me. What's his problem?" This didn't surprise me in the least. Here's the hard truth. It wasn't Chris's fault. It was hers. Genevieve doesn't give people a reason to remember her. Being an amazing listener is not just about what you hear. It's how you respond to what you hear. In every conversation, every interaction, every meeting we have, we want to give people a reason to remember us. Genevieve has supermodel looks and a very pleasant demeanor, but that's not enough. I can't help but compare my experience with Genevieve to a daily interaction I have with the parking lot attendant at my gym. George directs the traffic in the insanely small parking lot at my local gym. Despite people grumbling at him all day, he always greets everyone happily and asks them the same question. Want to know the daily fun fact? The first time he asked me this, I was lost in my own thoughts, charging across the lot. It stopped me dead in my tracks. Daily fun fact? I was delighted. Dopamine pumping and promise of a mental reward. Of course I want to know the daily fun fact. Then he recited his fun fact of the day, which is always something titillating or laugh-worthy like, "Did you know Scotland's national animal is the unicorn?" Or, "You can see an owl's eyeball when you look in its ear." Or, the one from today, "Russia has a larger surface area than Pluto." Here's the best part. Do you know where he gets his fun facts? Us. After he delivers his fact of the day, he asks each person, "Do you have a fun fact for me?" And he waits and listens as people tell him all kinds of obscure tidbits, some real facts and some just fun facts about all aspects of life. Talk about using hack number 3, conversational sparks. Inevitably, they end up laughing and checking Google for verification on most. Secretly, I hoard fun facts for him and always hope he will pick mine the next day. I used to pull into that lot stressed and miserable trying to squeeze into a parking space. Now I look for George. Challenges. 1. Introduce a colleague or friend to someone you think they should know. Practice making 2 raving introductions. 2. Who impresses you? Who is an amazing friend? Who is the best networker you know? Go tell them. Bonus. Take a 1-day vow of silence to be a better listener. Chapter review. We remember people who make us feel good, and who make us want to be the best version of ourselves. You can optimize an interaction by expecting optimal outcomes. Elevate people by hacking listening, highlighting, and expecting the best in those around you. Being a highlighter helps you be the highlight. Listen with purpose. Always search for the good. Be the high point of every interaction by giving people a reason to remember you. When you expect the worst, that's exactly what you will get. Fill in the blank. My biggest takeaway in this chapter is... Chapter 5. Intrigue. How to be ridiculously likable. In 2007, Lewis Howes was at the top of his game. As a 6'4" wide receiver for the Arena Football League and an All-American decathlete, Howes was poised to go all the way to the NFL. Then he snapped his wrist on a diving catch, and his dream of professional football was over in a matter of seconds. "It wasn't pretty. I was 24 years old, washed up, broke, and sleeping on my sister's couch with my arm in a cast and a mountain of credit card debt staring me in the face," said Howes. Howes had to start a new career track from scratch and accidentally discovered a powerful way to connect with people. In 2008, LinkedIn was a small social media website for business professionals, but Howes saw an opportunity to stay in touch with people in athletics. Even though he could no longer play, he still had a passion for sports. He began to construct his contact list from scratch. Next, he started testing what kind of messages worked best on cold contacts. Howes explained, "It was easy to track which messages were working and which were not based on the replies in my LinkedIn inbox." He found that his most successful messages mentioned at least three commonalities he had with that person. "I would try to find at least three things we shared, usually a mutual connection, a mutual interest, and a mutual organization, like a school, league, or sports team," said Howes. These messages were short and to the point. Howes composed a sample for me using this method. "Hi, Vanessa. My name is Lewis, and I wanted to reach out because I saw you're also friends with Nick Onken. We do work with Pencils of Promise together. I'm based in LA and saw you're from here. Do you ever get back in town? Would love to connect." Howes crafted a strategy for his follow-up messages, too. He explained, "I told them I loved their work and wanted to learn from them. I was direct and said, my goal is to learn about you and your success." He then ended every interaction with a specific question they could answer. Amazingly, this approach landed Howes phone calls, one-on-one meetings, and mentorships with some of the most powerful people in sports over and over again. One of his most impressive cold messages landed him a meeting with the co-founder of ESPN, Bill Rasmussen. "I was this kid with no job and no money, but I reached out to Bill and was able to get a sit-down meeting and interview him," recalled Howes. After the first year of reaching out to important people and learning from them, Howes hit a turning point. He realized what he was doing wasn't enough. "At this point, I understood that I couldn't just take. I had to give. But how do you give to someone like Bill Rasmussen?" explained Howes. As his contact list grew, Howes realized he finally had something to offer his connections, his own network. "I enjoyed helping people and relished becoming what Malcolm Gladwell calls a connector," said Howes. He asked his VIPs who they wanted to meet and then worked to get them that connection. "I would ask people, what's your biggest challenge right now?" and then would connect them with at least three people who I thought could help. "I would literally take my phone out over our cups of coffee, make the call, and hand the person my phone," said Howes. Howes also applied the triple threat to all of his interactions without even realizing it, and it worked like a charm. "I show people I'm listening to them and only them. I make eye contact, take them in, and pay attention to nothing else," said Howes. By January 2010, his company had over $5 million in sales. Eventually, he sold his business for seven figures. Now, Howes runs a successful lifestyle blog and podcast called The School of Greatness, where he interviews VIPs, experts, and luminaries on a wide variety of subjects. He uses his connection skills to find the most interesting, remarkable, and fascinating people to interview. "I should know. I was one of them. Insert self-deprecating laugh here. Ha ha." Yes, he did use the exact template above to reach out to me to be on his podcast. This chapter is about the powerful human behavior principle that makes Howes so socially attractive. The similarity attraction effect. One night, I was having dinner with a few friends when someone pulled a Pilot G2 pen out of her purse to take some notes. My friend Tyler spotted it instantly and asked, "Does your G2 pen have a 0.7 millimeter tip?" She didn't even have to look. Well, of course it does. 0.7 millimeter tips are the only sensible choice for Pilot G2s. Tyler smiled knowingly. "We are going to be friends," he said simply. Now, I am no pen expert, but according to Tyler, the Pilot G2 0.7 millimeter pen is simply the best. So good, in fact, that Tyler not only fiercely guards his against borrowing thieves, but also uses it as a sign. "If someone has a G2 pen, I know we are going to get along," Tyler explains. What's going on here? As humans, we are constantly on the lookout for people who are similar to us. Birds of a feather flock together is a far more accurate cliche than opposites attract. This is called the similarity attraction effect. It says that people like and are attracted to others who are similar rather than dissimilar to themselves. Researchers Dr. Ellen Burscheid and Dr. Elaine Walster believe we enjoy spending time with people who are similar to us for combinations of the following reasons. It is easier to get along with someone who enjoys the same activities and conversation topics. Spouses and friends are more likely to have similar personality types than randomly assigned pairs. When someone agrees with us, it makes us feel less alone and more right in our own opinions. If we can relate to someone strongly, we might be able to better predict their behavior and future decisions, making us feel more in control. We hope that if someone is similar to us, then there is a greater likelihood they will be attracted to us. Like begets like. A like on Facebook or a heart on Instagram or a retweet on Twitter are all digital forms of the similarity attraction effect in action. When you give someone some link love, you're telling them, "I like this too." That is why we are so addicted to checking our social media. We like to know that our friends and followers both like us and are like us. Without realizing it, we are constantly searching for reasons to think, feel, or say, "Me too." In a good meeting or great coffee date, you hear phrases like this. "Wow, you like Orange Is the New Black? I'm an addict." "You're gluten-free? Join the club." "Oh, I love Thailand. Maybe we were there at the same time." "Are you kidding? I'm a huge 49ers fan." "You're into rock climbing? Me too." On the other hand, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is inadvertently pointing out differences while trying to connect. Whenever you say a version of "not me," you're handicapping your connection from the start. "Not me" phrases sound like this. "You know, I never really got into Orange Is the New Black. I thought it was kind of boring." "Ugh, you're one of those gluten-free people. Don't you think that's a fad?" "I'm not a big traveler." "Sports? No, thank you. I would rather read a book or watch the news." "You're into rock climbing." "Not me. I'm afraid of heights." These kinds of "not me" comments tend to push people away and shut down a conversation. Does this mean you constantly have to blindly agree with the people you meet? No, of course not. But it does mean you have to put effort into searching for real similarities and shared interests. When someone posts something on social media that isn't relevant to you, you just keep scrolling. You don't share the post with a huffy comment like, "This isn't relevant to me." But we sometimes imply as much in our responses. So if someone mentions they went to a private school growing up, don't say, "Ugh, I hate those preppy kids. I went to good old public school." Instead, note it and resume looking for something you do have in common. You might say, "Interesting, did you play any sports?" Or, "Wow, I didn't know that. Tell me more." Don't fall into the "not me" trap. Instead, find a way to say, "Me too." Searching for "me too." My friend Alon Freeman sells raffle tickets at sporting events for charity. He messaged me with an interesting question. "Hey, Vanessa, I was wondering if you could use your human behavior knowledge to help me out with something I've been wondering. When I sell raffle tickets at games, I often dress in a suit to be more professional. But recently, I've been thinking that I should dress in team colors, maybe my tie or something. Let me know if there's any science to this, or if you think it's a good idea. Best, Alon." Alon's intuition was absolutely right. We like people who look like us. One study found that we are more likely to help people who are dressed like us. Someone dressed casually is more likely to help someone else who is also dressed casually over someone in a business suit. This is counterintuitive. One would think that someone in a business suit would be helped more often, period. Not so. I advised Alon to not only wear the team's colors, but also to dress exactly like the fans he was trying to sell to. Jeans, jersey, sneakers, hat and all. Guess what? He immediately began to sell more raffle tickets. This is the similarity attraction effect in action. We don't just have a soft spot for people who look like us. We are also drawn to people who think like us. There is an admittedly terrible and addictive MTV show that I watch, quote-unquote, for work, to, quote-unquote, observe human behavior. Are You the One is a reality show where 10 men and 10 women are brought into a house to find their soulmate. But of course, there's a catch. Each of the contestants has to take a battery of personality tests with love experts who have picked one ideal mate for them. Their goal is to find their ideal match from the batch of singles. In season 3, two of the singles, Connor Smith and Kayla Brackett, try to get a feel for their compatibility. Here's how that conversation goes. Note the constant searching for similarity. Kayla, I want someone who is close to their family. Connor, I'm a total mama's boy, but can you keep someone's attention? Kayla, are you kidding me? That is all me. I whip my man into shape. That's my thing. Connor, huh, that's what I asked for. Kayla, I want someone who is big and strong because I like to feel protected. Note, Connor is over 6'5" and calls himself the gentle giant. Connor, I always want to sleep on the side of the bed closest to the door. Kayla, oh good, I like to be closer to the wall. Summary, you're like me, I like what you like, I like you. We engage in the exact same behavior as Connor and Kayla, even in non-romantic situations. We do it with potential clients, aligning interests and work methods. We do it with new friends, comparing music taste and weekend activities. We even do it in line with strangers, commiserating over the long wait. You can hack the similarity attraction effect for your benefit with what I call hack number 5, thread theory. Find and follow threads of similarity to be more socially attractive. Every interaction should be about finding threads of commonalities. Every thread that binds you brings you closer to a person. The more threads you have, the more socially attractive you become. Here's how you can use thread theory to connect with the people you meet instantly. Step number 1, search for threads. Thread theory is the ultimate tool for opening any conversation. Whether you're cold calling, emailing a new contact, or meeting someone for the first time, the thread theory can help you blast through the dialogue door. Imagine that each person is walking around carrying a big, knotted ball of string. All of these strings are their thoughts, ideas, and opinions. We often wish our thoughts were more organized, but they are usually in a jumble, especially when we first walk into an event. We might be thinking about our to-do list, our parking meter, what we want for dinner, that good-looking person across the room, our neck ache, where to hang our coat, you get the idea. So we are all walking around carrying this mass of thoughts. The thread theory is an incredibly easy way to both open conversations and never run out of things to say. When you first begin an interaction, I want you to try to tease out some thoughts you both share. The more threads you share, the more you will be able to talk about, and the more ridiculously likable you will be. There are 3 main categories of commonalities that you can pull from at any time. 1. People. Mutual contacts are the best way to find threads of similarity. You can also liven up the conversation by searching for mutual friends. 2. Context. Think you don't have anything in common? Think about the context of your meeting. Maybe you're both on LinkedIn or both at the same conference. All you have to do is ask about it to get the conversational ball rolling. 3. Interests. Common interests are the best kind of threads because they introduce a topic you both invariably know a lot about. Ripe territory for great stories and interesting conversation. Here are a few openers and ideas for tapping into each type of commonality. For the category people, you can try an opener like, how do you know the host? I saw we're mutually connected through. I saw you speaking to, have you known each other for very long? Some possible threads you could look for are, you work at, do you know, you went to university, do you know, are you a friend of the bride or groom, roommate A or roommate B, an employee or the boss? For the category context, you can try these openers. How long have you been a part of this group? Great venue, right? How long have you been living here? Some possible context threads are, do you usually come to these kinds of events? Have you ever been to this conference, restaurant, or event before? I saw you were also part of the, LinkedIn Group. For the interest category, here are some openers you can use. Love your pen, keychain, bumper sticker, shirt, hat. I'm also a fan of... I'm a fellow member of... How long have you been apart? I saw you also went to, studied, are a part of... Here are some possible threads you can use with the category interests. How long have you been a fan of... What are you up to this weekend? Wasn't that speaker, presentation, raffle interesting? These thread theory questions can be used in groups, with new people, and even in emails and cold messages. Every time you discover a common thread, it links you together. You might also have noticed that some of these thread theory questions are also my favorite conversation sparkers. That's no coincidence. Simple questions can lead you into exciting conversational territory when you ask strategically and follow up with good listening. If you ask one of these questions and don't find a similarity, it's totally okay. For example, if someone says, "Oh, I don't know her," or "Nope, never been here before," no worries. Use that as an opener. You can say, "Yeah, it's a pretty big school. I think she studied political science. What did you study?" Or, "Me neither. Do you have any favorite local watering holes you go to?" Every answer you hear is one more step in getting to know them and being further along in the conversation. Don't let it faze you. Let it fuel you. Be on the lookout for physical examples of similarities too. For example, if you notice someone's USC keychain, you can say, "Go Trojans." Or if someone is driving a car you like, you can comment, "I was thinking about buying that car. How do you like it?" It can even be as simple as noticing what someone is drinking. "The red wine isn't bad, huh?" Making conversations has never been so easy. Step number 2, follow the thread. The thread theory is not about simply pointing out similarities. It is about exploring them. Once you have found a common thread, you can make it stronger by following it. How do you follow a common thread? Easy. Ask for why. Revolutionary Japanese inventor Sakichi Toyota founded Toyota Motor Company in 1937. He is also known for his innovative managerial techniques, one of which is called the 5 Whys. Toyota employees use the 5 Whys to problem solve and to get to the bottom of issues. This technique is now used across industries to quickly and effectively find solutions and root causes of problems. You might use the 5 Whys to figure out why a colleague is late on a project. First why, I couldn't get the numbers on time. Second why, I didn't know the right person to talk to. Third why, I have never worked with that department before. Fourth why, I usually go through my manager. Fifth why, interdepartmental communications only go through managers, which causes a bottleneck. That's the root cause. Of course, in day-to-day conversations, you can't ask why over and over again. But you can get a conversation to go much deeper, much faster, if you use the spirit of the 5 Whys. When you find a commonality, don't let it pass by. Ask the other person why it's important for them. When you stumble upon a similarity, don't jump to the next topic. Take it a step further and find out how they got started. If you hear a shared interest, don't let it hang without comment. Dig a little deeper. Let's say, through the thread theory, you find out the person you are speaking with is also an entrepreneur. If you follow that thread, you get a much deeper interaction. You, why did you decide to become an entrepreneur? Them, I always wanted to start my own business. You, interesting, why did that appeal to you? Them, I really wanted flexibility and freedom in work hours, and I knew I could never get that with a boss. You, I feel the same way. Why were you looking for more flexibility? Them, oh, I love to travel, so I wanted to be able to work from anywhere. You, that's wonderful. I'm also a huge traveler. I just came back from Chile. Why do you love to travel? Them, I've been dying to go to Chile. You know, I think I love travel so much because I think it's so important to get out of your comfort zone and learn from people around the world. You, that's so true. I have met the most interesting people on my travels. Why do you think being out of our comfort zone is so important? Them, huh, good question. I guess I think true happiness comes from trying new things, seeing new things, experiencing new things. How about you? Where do you think happiness comes from? This is a synthesized version of the kind of robust, deep conversations that come when you ask more whys. Why gets you beyond small talk, into an exploration of motivations, dreams, and interests. And every why helps you find more threads. In this way, the thread theory ensures you will never run out of things to talk about, nor will you ever have to be worried that you won't have something to say. Just search for the commonality and follow the thread with why. Step number 3, create ties. The last step of the thread theory is optional and reserved only for special interactions. When you're having a really great discussion and clicking with someone, you can take your connection to the next level by using your common threads to tie you together. Let's look at how Lewis Howes did this. After he searched for commonalities and followed the threads he found, he asked people what they needed and how he could help. In other words, he tied his abilities to their needs. When you say, "You have a problem, I'm going to help you fix it," you create the ultimate similarity. Every time you offer help, support, and advice, you create a deeper bond with someone and a permanent similarity. Most of the time, opportunities to help people find solutions come up organically. You hear someone has a need and know you can help. Here are some examples. "Since you're new in town, I can send you a list of my favorite local restaurants." "I'm sure I know someone in that industry. Connect with me on LinkedIn and I can introduce you." "I frequently get extra tickets to the game. I'll text you next time." "Sounds like that is a real problem. Let's set up a consult call and I can see if my company can help." "Yeah, going vegan is so hard. I have a few recipes I can send you." If nothing comes up during a conversation, you can also end with a tie. I typically end most of my great meetings with a single question. "Can I help you with anything?" This is my favorite thread theory question. Not only does it give me a chance to create a tie, but also I usually end up learning something new about them. It's a tiny hack that goes a long way. In fact, every step of thread theory is others-oriented, in that it helps people untangle their own bundles of thoughts. For example, going through the 5 whys with a friend can help them figure out why things aren't working at their job. Following a thread with a partner could help you both figure out vacation plans. Remember, since step 3 of the thread theory is optional, you actually have to mean it when you say it. Don't offer help you can't give. Don't make hollow promises. Create ties only with people who you genuinely want to be connected to. Bonus, teach me. What if you can't find a thread? What if there are no authentic opportunities for me too? Lewis Howes frequently interviews experts on his podcast in new areas of business or life. And when he can't say me too, he says, teach me. This produces incredible content for his listeners and deep connections between him and his experts. If someone mentions something that you don't know about or are unfamiliar with, ask for more information. Teach me is still a thread. Here are some ways you can make teach me a thread. I've never heard of that book. What's it about? What an interesting career. I've never met anyone in your line of work before. Tell me about it. I've actually never been out of the country, but would love to travel more. Have any insider tips for a beginner? Bottom line, me too and teach me are two of the most powerful and underutilized phrases we have. Use them whenever possible. Challenges. 1. Next time you talk to someone, try finding 3 commonalities in the first 3 minutes. 2. Practice asking why 5 times and see if you learn something new. 3. Create a tie by asking a colleague or friend if you can help them with anything. Chapter review. The more you have in common with someone, the more likable you become. We like people like us. The thread theory is an easy way to captivate attraction by simply searching for shared interests, asking why, and then offering to help. Always be on the lookout for ways to say, me too. Don't overthink what you're going to say. Just search for commonalities. Go deeper by asking the 5 whys. Tie yourself to someone by making their problem your own. Fill in the blank. My biggest takeaway in this chapter is... Part 2. The First 5 Hours. Dr. Mike Cruz is the new head of the ER at All Saints Hospital in Manhattan. He's headstrong, direct, and a little intimidating. Dr. Cruz needs the support of his staff in turning the All Saints ER into a premier trauma center. But shaking up systems and changing protocols has led to an all-out battle with longtime doctors and nurses. Finally, a sympathetic nurse, Zoe, goes into his office with a pink notebook. It's kind of like a passport, she explains. It's a map to the people who work for you. Dr. Cruz eyes it suspiciously as Zoe continues. It has their birthdays, anniversaries, things that make them sad, things that make them happy, who cries when a patient dies, who makes a joke and then cries in private. It's all the things you should know. Dr. Cruz flips through the book half-heartedly. Finally, he asks, "Why are you giving me this?" Zoe tries again to explain. "You expect us to be good at our job? We expect the same of you." This scene appears in Nurse Jackie, Season 4, Episode 10, Handle Your Scandal. In Part 2, you'll get a map to navigating people much like the one Nurse Zoe gave Dr. Cruz, a guide to decoding, understanding, and predicting behavior. Nurse Zoe calls it a people passport. I call it your matrix. This section will help you solve puzzles like, how do you speed read someone? How can you predict someone's behavior? How can you prevent miscommunications? While Part 1 helped you hack the first 5 minutes of an interaction, this section will help you take your connection one step further. How do you get the next date? How do you nail the next interview? How do you make a deeper connection in your next meeting? This section will help you advance your relationship during those first 5 hours. Chapter 6, Decode. How to Uncover Hidden Emotions. I have a sad story to tell you, but don't worry, it has a happy ending. In the 1970s, there was a 42-year-old housewife who was having a midlife crisis. To protect her identity, we will call her Mary. Upon reaching her 40th birthday, Mary found herself alone most of the time. Her children had grown and moved out of the house, and her husband was a busy professional. At night, she had difficulty sleeping, and during the day, she had a harder and harder time managing the house. Frequently, she spent most of the day crying. She complained of feeling overwhelmingly useless. Finally, she began to contemplate suicide. Luckily, Mary knew she needed help. Her family admitted her to a local hospital for extra care. The first 3 weeks of treatment went well. A combination of group therapy and medication seemed successful. During one of Mary's filmed sessions with her psychiatrist, Mary insisted she was feeling significantly better. Given her improved mood, Mary asked, perhaps she could get a weekend pass to visit her family. After consulting with the staff, the doctor agreed with the team. Mary was better. Fortunately, right before checking out, Mary came clean. She went to her doctor and admitted that she had been lying in her interview and faking it in group therapy sessions. She was still desperately depressed. The coming weekend, she'd planned to do something drastic away from the hospital. But her confession marked a true turning point in her recovery. And after many months of treatment, overcoming a few relapses, Mary went on to lead a normal life with her family. Despite this happy ending, the Mary incident left the hospital's medical team rattled. How had she deceived so many people in the facility? The hospital staff reviewed a video recording of the doctor's interview with Mary. What had they missed? In fact, medical deception is a worrying dilemma. Patients frequently lie to their doctors, and psychologists dread being fooled by patients who hide their real health needs. After multiple experienced psychologists reviewed Mary's film without answers, the team decided to get more help. They enlisted Dr. Paul Ekman, a young psychologist who had been conducting experiments on human lie detection with patients. Dr. Ekman and his team spent hundreds of hours reviewing Mary's footage. It wasn't until he put the video in slow motion that clues began to emerge. When the doctor asked Mary about her plans for the weekend, a frightening emotion leaked out. You just had to know where to look. Dr. Ekman explained, "We saw in slow motion a fleeting facial expression of despair, so quick that we had missed seeing it the first few times we examined the film. This flicker of sorrow was the break that Ekman and his team needed. They began to re-examine the footage, looking for these micro gestures. After a few rounds, they started spotting them consistently, always right before a lie and often covered by a fake smile. Dr. Ekman came to call these flickering facial gestures microexpressions. Genius is only a superior power of seeing. John Ruskin. Face science. Doctors once thought babies learned to smile by mimicking the doting expressions of their mothers and fathers. This is a myth. Congenitally blind babies make the same facial expressions as other babies despite having never seen a face. Our instinct to make certain expressions derives from nature, not nurture. Microexpressions are an innate, universal human behavior. Fascinated by this idea, Dr. Paul Ekman conducted a series of studies in a remote part of New Guinea. He brought with him photos of Americans expressing different emotions, showing everything from smiles to grimaces to frowns. The tribe he was visiting was especially disconnected from the Western world. They'd never seen a movie, much less TV. With a translator's help, Dr. Ekman asked the New Guineans to examine the Americans' facial expressions and guess what they thought each American was feeling in the picture. Dr. Ekman was shocked to find that their guesses were extremely accurate. They could even perform the experiment in reverse. As Ekman named an emotion, participants quickly mimed the corresponding facial expression. After repeating this experiment with participants all around the world, Dr. Ekman was able to identify 7 universal microexpressions. Microexpression, noun, a brief, involuntary facial expression that humans make when they feel an intense emotion. We make these expressions regardless of culture, sex, or race. This is why reading microexpressions is such a valuable people hack. Since everyone falls prey to the same 7 facial tells, we can study them, spot them, and decode them. How to decode faces. While my husband watches Monday Night Football on ESPN, I am glued to ABC for my weekly Monday dose of The Bachelorette. It's trashy TV that I insist is for work to observe human behavior. Really, I just want to win my Bachelorette Fantasy League. In one particularly notable season, Bachelorette Emily Maynard meets Ari Leyendyke Jr., a dreamy race car driver from Arizona. There are 25 men competing to win Emily's heart and propose to her at the end of the season. Tall with a big smile and blue eyes, Ari has potential to go all the way. There's only one problem. Emily's former fiancé was also a race car driver and tragically died on the way to a race. Could Ari's profession hit too close to home? Let me tell you, viewers like me were on the edge of our seats to find out. The night of the confession, Ari sits Emily down to tell her something. Emily smiles demurely, waiting for the potential bomb to drop. Here's a recap of just the verbal exchange. Ari: I'm a little nervous about one thing, I'm going to admit. Emily: Tell me. Ari: So my background is in racing, so I don't know if you knew that about me, but I have been in race cars since I was 14 years old. Are you okay with that? Emily: Yeah, I am, totally. I love racing. I love being at the racetrack. I have so many good memories there. And it's a part of who I am, and it's really the only sport I know about. Ari: That's so cool. Emily: I know it like the back of my hand. I can tell you about racing. I can tell you about cars. Phew! Sounds good, right? Nope. It sounded good, but it looked pretty bad. This 20-second moment spoke volumes. Emily's facial expressions told us a totally different story. Here's what happened behind the words. When Emily said, "Tell me," she showed a happiness microexpression, all looking smooth. When Ari mentioned that his background was in racing, Emily very quickly showed a brief sadness microexpression and then raised her eyelids in a fear microexpression. When she convinced him that she was totally fine and she loved racing, she actually shook her head no. She had a loss of volume on her words and then briefly flashed a contempt microexpression. When Ari said, "That's so cool," Emily touched her hair. At the very end, when Emily says, "I know it like the back of my hand," she shows a contempt microexpression one more time. During this interaction, Emily showed 3 crucial microexpressions: sadness, fear, and contempt. These were key because they were incongruent with her words. Even though her words said she was fine, her true emotions were displayed on her face. Emily didn't choose Ari in the end. He made it to the final 2 before being cut. Anyone who could read microexpressions would not have been surprised by Ari's fate. His profession was a deal breaker. All you had to do was look at her face to see it. Perhaps this could have saved Ari. If he had noticed her hidden emotions and addressed them, he could have reassured her. Instead, he missed the nonverbal clues of what was to come. I call this hack the decoder. Hack number 6, the decoder. Spot the 7 microexpressions during interactions to uncover truth. Decoding is all about looking for the emotional intent behind the words. It's about listening by hearing and looking. First, here's how to use the decoder hack. Congruency. Look to see if someone's stated emotions match their visible emotions. If your client says he is happy to see you, he should have a happy microexpression. If your wife says she is fine, but has an angry microexpression, she probably isn't fine. Connection. People make microexpressions while they are talking and while they are listening. Facial expressiveness is never off. While this can be a lot to take in, paying consistent attention to someone's face also helps you with hack number two, the eye contact piece of the triple threat. If you thought your average eye contact was below 60%, then reading microexpressions is an easy way to incentivize more gazing. Speed. Microexpressions happen incredibly quickly, in less than a second. Anything longer than a second is simply a facial expression. Why is this important? Microexpressions, less than a second, cannot be controlled, so they are honest views into emotions. Facial expressions, longer than a second, can be faked and are less honest. Therefore, you should look at brief flashes of facial responsiveness for the most accurate reading. Step number one, spotting. According to Dr. Paul Ekman, when you are speaking with someone, these are the seven reactions you should look for. Watch videos of all the microexpressions in action in your digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. Anger. We flash signs of anger when we feel displeasure at others or annoyance with a situation. To make an anger microexpression, try doing this with me. Lower your eyebrows and pinch them together. Make sure two vertical creases form in between your eyebrows. Tense your lower eyelids. Tighten your lips, either press them firmly together or open them as if you're going to yell. You often see an anger microexpression in the following situations: during a confrontation, when delivering bad news, before an argument or fight. Photo alert, accidentally in a profile photo when someone is squinting into the sun or does not like to be in front of the camera. I sometimes feel that facial expressions change my vocal power. Here is me saying hello with an anger microexpression. Hello. Contempt. Contempt, scorn, disdain, or disrespect is quite a powerful and complex emotion that is marked by an extremely simple facial gesture. Contempt is often called smirking because it is a one-sided mouth raise. Here's what's interesting about contempt. It confuses us. We offer a microexpression quiz for you to take in our digital bonuses at scienceofpeople.com/toolbox. Over 22,000 people have taken this quiz. Contempt is the one that gets the most wrong answers. Of all the emotions, contempt seems to stump 40% of people, followed closely by fear, which 35% of people get wrong. Contempt confuses us because we mistake the smirk for a partial smile or boredom. But that could not be further from the truth. Contempt is a cue of serious dislike or scorn. We often show contempt when we feel that someone or something is beneath our attention. Make a contempt microexpression with me. Lift one of your cheeks. Now pull up that corner of your mouth. You often see a contempt microexpression in the following situations. If you tell someone no. When someone hears or encounters something they don't like. During a disagreement or after being put down. Photo alert, accidentally in a profile picture where someone thinks it means a partial smile. Here's how my hello sounds when I make the contempt expression. Hello. Happiness. Woohoo! We have already learned the microexpression for happiness in hack number one. Genuine happiness is marked by the lifting of the upper cheek muscles. You know you are seeing a real smile when you see those lovely crow's feet wrinkles around the eyes. Make a happiness microexpression with me. Pull up both corners of your lips equally. Part your lips so your teeth are visible. Engage your upper cheek muscles. Try to cause wrinkling along the sides of your eyes. You often see a happiness microexpression in the following situations. When celebrating with someone. Delivering good news. In a pleasant or positive experience. You might see fake happiness as well. This often happens when someone is trying to cover up real feelings. They're feeling tired or overwhelmed, but trying to look positive. Photo alert, accidentally in a profile picture when trying to look relaxed. Here's my hello with a genuine happiness microexpression. Hello. Fear. When we are afraid, our body often goes into fight or flight response. Our facial expression actually helps us respond quickly and accurately to threats. As soon as we are afraid, our eyes widen and our eyebrows go up our forehead. This way, we can take in as much of our environment as possible to look for potential escapes or more threats. Then our mouth opens and we gasp for breath, taking in oxygen in case we have to yell for help or flee. Make a fear microexpression with me. Widen your eyes. Lift your upper eyelids. Raise up your eyebrows so horizontal lines appear in the center of your forehead. Slightly open your mouth. You often see a fear microexpression in the following situations. During a dangerous situation. When you give someone difficult information. In an unknown or confusing interaction. Photo alert. Accidentally in a picture when a flash blinds someone or they're nervous being photographed. Here's my hello when I make the fear microexpression. Hello? Surprise. Surprise is a great truth-telling emotion. For example,